So we will now have our Bible reading, which can be found on Colossians chapter 1, verses 11 to 13. Being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience, and giving joyful thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of his own holy people in the kingdom of light. For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins.
Thanks, Phoebe. Now, let me say, let me make sure we've got a sort of, I'm positioned rightly. Am I too close? How does it look? Am I too scared? Okay, lift me up because I want you to see my hair. I had a haircut the other day. I want you to see that. That's good. And you can see my arms because that's half my communication method. My arms, right? Okay. Because I'm a crazy man. I need to be animated. You know, have you ever tried me preaching with my arms tight? I could never do it. All right. All right, let's do it. Okay. Well, the aim for this this year is to be making disciples. That's been the aim that we've had for the last so many years. We want to set a direction and we want to set a pattern that will set our church in the right course for the long haul, making disciples. But in doing so, what we want to be doing is we want to do two things. We want to make sure that we are very clear what it is and how we make disciples, and that we're all united in what it is and how to make disciples. You see, the problem that we have is firstly that we're often unclear about what it is. We've heard the term so many times. I've preached it, we've heard it from sermons and so on like that, but the truth of the matter is that still many people are very confused, or if not ignorant or forgetful, about what a disciple is and how we make disciples and why we should make disciples. You know, a lot of times, as I said at the leaders' meeting, a lot of times we hear the words, but then we're not sure what those words actually mean. And in fact, one of the problems of many of us, if you've been coming to church many, many years, you've probably heard endless words. They're sort of part of our culture. But a lot of times when people ask you, what does that actually mean? We're stumped. We're saying, well, I'm not sure. And we regurgitate the same sort of words again. What is a disciple? A disciple is a disciple of Jesus. And what does that mean? And a lot of times we're not quite sure. But even when we are clear, we're not united. So some people might have this understanding, some people might have that understanding, and the two never meet. And one of the problems of the fact that sort of thing is that we therefore move in different directions. And it's one of the problems I've seen in many churches that we often say the same words but mean completely different things. And many causes of conflict arises because we have the same words but mean very different things. So one of the things that we want to do, even though we've gone through this again and again and again, we want to drive it into our brains, into our hearts, and our way we do things. What a disciple is, why make disciples, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to be working over that for the next couple of months, right? But to help drive that in, we're also going to peg what we teach in the pulpit to what we discuss in our growth groups. In the past, the two often were running in different directions, which is not wrong in that sense, right? But we actually want to tie the two much closer together this year. And why is that? Reinforcement and being able to dive deeply into things. The truth of the matter is, for most of us, if all you get is the 30-minute sermon at best, and even as the best sermon, whatever, guess what? After a few days, you've probably forgotten it. It's not a problem with members in the congregation. Guess what? It's also a problem with preachers. Sometimes I have forgotten what I just preached on a few days ago. Maybe it's because I'm just whatever, I'm just thinking about other things. If I have problems, you guys have problems. So what's the way to reinforce what we learned from the pulpit is to discuss it further in our growth groups, which is why I actually want to encourage everyone, if you're not in a growth group, join a growth group or at least start meeting with other Christians to think about these things. But it's also not an opportunity to reinforce, but to dive deeper. Because the truth of the matter, a 30-minute sermon at best can only go so far. It can only skim the surface. You don't even dive deeply. So sometimes you're going to say things and you think to yourself, well, what does that mean? A growth group is the opportunity to dive deeper. Sometimes you're going to preach on something and say, well, what does it mean for me? Well, a growth group is an opportunity where you can actually discuss with other people what it actually means for me in much more practical ways. And so my suggestion to you is, if you're not in one, actually join one. In fact, I want to say that the strength of a church is not in its pulpit preaching. The strength of a church lies in its teaching ministry. And what I mean by that, a lot of people just go from one church to another just looking for the sermon. And it's just nothing more than spiritual entertainment, right? The strength of the church lies in its teaching ministry, which means not in the pulpit, but also the growth group ministry. It's the one-to-one conversations, the chat over the pews after service and so on. It's the whole kit and caboodle, the whole teaching ministry that is the strength in the church, which is why, therefore, be part of a growth group, have conversations, stay at church, have chats with each other afterwards, which is why, for those in Zoom land, I want to encourage you to come back next week, because it's an opportunity to have those sort of fireside chats, side chats, that really is critical to the growth of the church. Well, what are we going to go through this year? Well, as I reminded you last week, but you've probably forgotten, so I'm going to reiterate it again, reinforcement one. We're going to go through a series for the next 2 months called Making Disciples. We're following a book called, actually, Making Disciples by Matthias Media. And so each session, each time, I'm going to be working through that booklet in a sort of 30-minute sermon. But you actually get to go deeper into that sort of study in the growth groups. Then we're going to go through some biblical passages, Ezra, Nehemiah. Then we're going to look at loving the church. And why six steps of loving the church? Because one place that's the key to making disciples is actually the church. You realize that. Church is a great place to make disciples. But if we're going to do that, we got to be serious and know how to do that. So six steps to loving church. How can I actually use church, come to church, to actually serve people, grow them in Jesus, help them walk better with Jesus, help them to love Jesus, help them to follow Jesus? How can I do better? And six steps to loving your church is helping us to walk through, so that church is not just a spectator sport, it's actually a team sport where every single person is involved in this work. And lastly, towards the end, we're going to go through the Generosity Project. In between that, we're going through 1 Peter about being disciples in a hostile environment. But towards the end, we're going to look through the Generosity Project, which you've already seen. If you want to dive deeply into that study early, that's fine. But we're going to do that as a church. I'm going to preach on it. We're going to preach on it. We're going to discuss the groups. And the aim is to be a generous church. Because if we're going to make disciples, a key to making disciples is the attitude of generosity. It's about giving our hearts and our minds and our hands generously to others so that they can know Jesus. You cannot be a disciple-making church unless you are marked by deep, deep generosity. In fact, it's one of the reasons why we don't make disciples, because we're basically stingy people. Stingy with our time, stingy with our effort, our energy, our money. So we're going to be serious about, let's learn to be generous. Well, let's dive deeply into the passage here. Making disciples. And if you go through this series, Making Disciples by Matthias Media, it starts off by asking the question, by making the point that disciple making is a daunting task. It is actually hard work. It's a scary work, right? I don't know about you, but I find it scary. Just the other day, I had a great opportunity to make disciple to talk to one of my relatives at our sort of Chinese New Year dinner last night. But I could feel the pressure that this is hard work. I could feel the temptation just to keep quiet and not say anything, right? Because it was scary in one sense. Now, he wasn't going to shoot me, but there's this inner sort of compulsion not to open your mouth. And I suspect that's the same for all of us. It's actually hard work. It's a daunting task. And even more so because it's an increasingly hostile environment that we are having to live out our Christian faith. Many years ago, it was, you talk to people about Jesus, and they would, thank you, but no thank you. These days, you talk to people about Jesus and say, you're an idiot. Why are you so stupid to follow something like that? That's not just in the schools. That's in the schools, university campuses, at workplaces. Nevertheless, despite how difficult it is, I think all of us know it's still important. I think all of us still know it's important. Yeah, let's be honest. If we're honest with ourselves, we are not doing a great job at it. Not ourselves personally, let alone our church. So today, we're starting this series for the next 2 months on making disciples. And one thing I want to say to you today is that making disciples is not just something that's a good Christian thing to do. Making disciples lies at the very heart of what creation's all about. Do you realize that? It lies at the very heart of what God is doing in this world. And therefore, to make disciples is really being at the very heart of God's plan of action from the very beginning of creation to the very end of creation and into the new creation. To make disciples is really getting to the very heart of everything, and which is why we need to take this seriously. And let's start by looking at Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 to 20. And we know the Great Commission. We've heard it before. We've preached on it last year and this year and so on like that. But here's the thing I want to ask you. Context is very important. When we hear the Great Commission, it's often given to us in a sort of safe environment. I speak on it here. It's a safe environment. But we need to remember that the context in which the Great Commission was given was a very, very different context. And you see that in Matthew chapter 26 through to 28. Now, I want to give you a bit of exercise. You have literally 1 minute. Only 1 minute. And for you on Zoom land, it's the same for you. 1 minute, right? What I want you to do is skim through chapters 26 to 28. And I want you to tell me, skim through 26, 28, what were the key events that you find preceded Jesus giving the Great Commission? What were some of the key events from 26 to 28? Now, pull your Bibles out. Now, unfortunately, we don't have any physical Bibles. That's okay. That's ancient technology. What you do is pull your phone out. Don't surf the net. Don't go on YouTube or Netflix. Pull your phone out. Get the Bible. If you don't want the Bible, is go to, what do you call it? Bible Gateway. Type in Matthew 26 to 28 and just skip through. And, you know, you can cheat this one. You know what I mean, cheat? Read the headings, okay? They got headings there, all right? Yeah, literally 1 minute. And I want you to tell me, what were the key events that preceded the Jesus giving the Great Commission? And for you on Zoom land, you can do the same thing. What were the pre-events? You just type it into the chat, okay? Pre-events. You guys in Zoom land do not get scot-free, okay? You do the work as well. So I want it. The Last Supper, yep. Thank you, Becca. Anyone else? The Last Supper, what else? And people here in the physical world, Jesus' death, what else? I don't just want Becca saying everything. Anyone else? Someone else? And you guys? Resurrection, Jesus' death, Last Supper, resurrection. What else? Anyone else? Annabelle. Yes? Yeah, the Last Supper. My daughter said that already. What else? What else happened? Clement. Yeah, Peter denied Jesus. Good. You can cheat, okay? You can cheat, all right? Just look at the headings, all right? What else? Come on, no one in Zoom lands is saying anything. You guys are, I'm not going to say slack. What else? Come on. Phoebe? Judas hangs himself? Yeah, that's cool. What else? Vanessa? No? Jesus betrayed? Yep. Sorry? Resurrection, yeah, resurrection. Well, you look at it from 26 to 28, what do you see? Jesus is there in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's arrested. He's taken to a high court. He's therefore tried on a kangaroo court. He's beaten up by guards, beaten to a pulp. He's scourged in a very bloody way. He walks to the Golgotha. There he's crucified, nailed to the cross, and so on and so forth. It is a grisly sight. In other words, when Jesus gave the Great Commission, just prior to that, not long, it would have been a month prior to that, they could not have forgotten the grisly specter of what they had experienced. Their leader, their beloved leader, who had promised so much, was arrested, beaten, and then tortured. In other words, the context of the Great Commission was hostility, fear. It was a dangerous environment. And you can see that because when you come to the book of Acts, what do you see in the book of Acts? They are scared stiff, right? And in many ways, that's important for us because when we hear the Great Commission, we are in an environment of growing hostility in Australia. Certainly, it is the case around the world. And for many people, be a Christian and to talk to people about Jesus is actually dangerous. Yet, nevertheless, Jesus in that context, in our context, continues to give us the Great Commission and command us to make disciples of all nations. He wasn't giving that in an idyllic situation. He was giving that great command to make disciples in a world that is hostile to Jesus and evidenced by the very fact that they killed him, even though he's resurrected. But look at the basis of this command. If we look at Matthew chapter 28, chapter 28 is framed by five all things. It's very important because notice what he says. Jesus' authority, Jesus says to himself, all authority has been given to me. All authority. Now that's an astonishing thought. The authorities have just arrested Jesus. Yet Jesus re-emphasized to his disciple, all authority has been given to me. Yeah, they took me, they crucified me, but all authority has been given to me. See, Jesus handed himself over. They didn't take him. He wasn't just a victim. He handed himself over to him because he had to fulfill scripture. But Jesus says, all authority has been given to me. Now you think about what are the authorities that stand over above you. What are the things that are obstacles and things that stand against you to make disciples? Jesus says, all authority has been given to me for you to be able to do that sort of thing. Notice what else he says here, all nations. And see the second term, all nations. Now, the whole idea of all nations, when Jesus said that to Peter and the other guys, they would have think to themselves instinctively, all nations mean all Jews everywhere. But Jesus wasn't thinking about all Jews everywhere. He was thinking literally everyone indiscriminately, Jews and Gentiles. You know, one of the biggest problems when we think about all nations is we're keeping thinking all people who are just like me. My friends, my relatives, I've said that many times. But we need to recognize that this mandate, this command to make disciples of all nations is all people without discrimination. All people without discrimination, whether you like them or not, your work bosses, your colleagues, your neighbors, your friends, and your relatives, and even, dare I say, even your enemies. But notice also he says here, what does he say? Obey everything. You know, one of the things, interesting thing Jesus doesn't say is teach them everything. He says teach them to obey everything. What is it to make a disciple? Is to teach people to obey everything that Jesus taught us. Now, let me ask this question to you. When was the last time, when you come to church, when was the last time you talked to someone about obeying Jesus? When was the last time you talked to them about what Jesus taught you and asked them to obey it? See, when's the last time when you come to church, do you ever talk to each other about Jesus and about things he calls upon us to do? We are called to teach them to obey. Parents, do you teach your children to obey everything that Jesus taught us? You husbands and wives, you teach your spouses to obey everything that Jesus taught you. And when we come to church, do you teach each other to obey everything that Jesus has taught us? Because that is what Jesus commands us to do. And so it needs to be said here that as you listen, what is Jesus saying to you? Well, your responsibility and your command he gives to you is to teach everyone to obey everything he has taught you. You get the message, right? But notice also there's assurance here. Jesus says, I will be with you always. I am with you always. And you know what that means? There is never a moment, never a moment, never a minute when he's not with you backing your work to help others to know Jesus. Do you realize that? Never a minute that you're on your own without Jesus without Jesus supporting. He's there right in the thick of thin, right at that minute. And what's he doing? He's there supporting you, protecting you, providing you, guiding, comforting, directing, opening doors, strengthening you so that you can make help others to know Jesus, to love Jesus, follow Jesus, be like Jesus. When you come to church, Jesus has your, you've got Jesus back here to come and talk to someone about Jesus. When you go to work, Jesus says, I'm with you, and that every moment to help you to talk to others about Jesus. And notice what he also says here lastly, to the very end of the age. That is to say, you know how it is that people make promises and they pull out because it's too hard. They pull out because they get bored. Not so with Jesus. He is with us to the very end of the age, always. And these five things, therefore, frame this great commission. You can begin to see why it's so important, right? Why it's so important. You see, making disciples is not because you have the right personality type. Making disciples is not because you are sort of you're paid to do it, you're in the position. Not making disciples is not about whether you got the gift or not. This command is given to all personality types, to all people, all his disciples, whether you got the gift or not, and to all those who have the position, whether they have it or not. In other words, it's given to you. You are to make disciples. You get the idea? Making disciples flows out of his authority, not out of your personality. Making disciples flows out of his authority, not out of your position. Making disciples flows out of his authority, not out of your circumstances. That's an important thing. Well, the Bible talks about, you know, Jesus spells out very clearly he has all authority, right? But notice also, it's one thing to say I've got the authority, but what does it actually look like on the ground? You can stop the sharing now. What's it look like on the ground? Well, here's a bit of exercise I want you to do. Now, again, pull out your real Bible, okay, the phone, and I want you to skim chapters 8 to 9. And what do you see examples of Jesus' authority being illustrated there? Just skim. Again, you can cheat, all right? You can cheat. This is one time where cheating's okay, right? And look through the titles, and I want you to tell me what are examples that demonstrate Jesus' authority. And on Zoom land, I want you to also type in, all right? Don't switch off in Zoom land. Don't go to sleep. Don't go to the toilet. You can hold off for a few minutes, all right? I want you to tell me on Zoom, on chat, and I want you to tell me what some examples where Jesus demonstrates his authority, okay? I'm going to give you a minute. You can talk. Actually, I don't know if you want to talk to each other or not. Maybe you should talk to each other, okay? Can you talk? Yell out to each other? Just turn around and yell at each other, something like that. Just zip through. I don't know if you want to do that. I'll leave it up to you guys, okay? You guys are old enough. All right, you have 1 minute. I want you to tell me what examples do you see of Jesus' authority being demonstrated. Okay, 1 minute. That's good. Thank you, Daniel Shee. Okay, what do we have? Jesus calms a storm. Authority over the natural world. Jesus raises a dead girl. Okay, am I moving around too much? Okay. Some people might actually be quite blessed that I'm blurred, right? Okay, let's go. Evil spirits. Okay, Jesus removes evil spirits. Okay, anyone else? Jono, you want to say something? Yes, you do. He what?
Jesus forgives.
Ah, that's an interesting thing. Authority over sins. Yes, he forgives. Yes, Jesus forgives. What else? Vanessa? Healing, yeah, healing. Okay. Annabelle, you're an FY girl. I've got to pick on you. He calms a storm. That's right. So it said that. Very good. He calms a storm. Daniel Shee. So that's pretty good. You and Daniel on the same page. Huh? That's pretty good. Good observation. So you don't need to be a pastor to see that. You can be a year 7 girl. You year 7? Year six? Eight. All right, whatever. Okay. Jeez, what else? What else do we see? Phoebe. He eats a tax collector's house, yeah? Okay, what we want to see is pictures of authority. Authority. What else? Phoebe? Raising the dead. Charlie?
Follow me.
Oh, yeah, he comes follow me, and they follow, don't they? That's true. So what you see when you skim through chapters 8 and 9, you see Jesus just, you know, he heals the leper by a word. In chapter 8, 5 to 13, a centurion recognizes Jesus' authority and says, look, just give the word and she'll be right. Just give the, you don't even come. Just give the word. Jesus gives the word and the person's healed. He has authority over demon sicknesses. As Daniel Wrightley and Annabelle point out, he calms the storm. He has the weather pattern. He's not like the weatherman who just predicts it. Jesus actually creates the weather. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Over demons. In other words, the point here is that Jesus, making disciples, when Jesus says he has authority, he means it. It's a big deal. It's not just empty words. A lot of times people say they have authority, but it means nothing. Jesus' authority, and you can see it in action. But here's the other thing about his authority. It is actually God-given authority. This is Jesus is not a self-appointed authority. It's actually given to him by God. You know, totalitarian regimes are self-appointed leaders. Democracies are people-appointed leaders. Jesus is a God-appointed leader. God has given Jesus all authority. And you can see this in Matthew 11, verse 27. You can look it up in your own time. Jesus says, all things have been given to me. So in other words, to obey Jesus is literally to obey God. And so therefore, again, this command to make disciples is not just a nice thing to do. It's a divine thing to do. That is to say, it comes literally from God himself. But I actually want to say here that not only does disciple making come out of their authority of God, disciple making is part of God's plan from the very beginning of creation right through to the very new creation. It's part and parcel, if not at the very center of God's plan of creation. Now, that's a big thing. Now, that's true. Then making disciples is no small part of our Christian life. It needs to be the key critical part. Have a look with me at Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 and 16. Colossians 1, 15, 16, you'll see on the screen there. Let me read that out to you. Now, the passage that Phoebe read out, you could say, provides the background, right? And it's a prayer for people to grow. But interesting, the prayer for people to grow is based on something more foundational. And it's based on what God is doing in the world from creation past to the creation future. And I want you to notice this. The Son is the invisible, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. And I want you to know two things. Firstly, notice once again the supreme authority that Jesus has over all the creation. But the second thing I want you to draw attention to is that last part there. All things have been created through him and for him. People ask, often one big question people ask, what is the purpose of life? Why am I here? Why do I exist? What is the world all about? And this passage answers that question. All things were created for Jesus. Do you realize that? All things were created for Jesus. You were created for Jesus. The world was created for Jesus. The universe was created for Jesus. Let's bring it back to making disciples. What is making disciples? You know what making disciples is? Making disciples is about really telling people to be true to themselves, to live authentic and meaningful lives. Making disciples, asking people to be who you are. What does that mean? Well, who are you? You are created for Jesus. An authentic life is a real life because when lived for Jesus. A meaningful life is a life that is found when you are living for Jesus. When you're knowing Jesus, living for Jesus, being like Jesus, obeying Jesus. Why? Because we were created for him in the first place. Not to know Jesus, not to grow in Jesus, not to follow Jesus, not to live for Jesus is to live false lives. It's to live unauthentic lives. It's to live a meaningless life. And so you can see here that to actually make disciples takes us back to what God is doing from the very beginning of creation to the very end of creation, because all things were made for him. Now, this comes out even more so in verses 17 to 18. Have a look at verse 17 to 18. Look at that last thought. Let me read that. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together, and he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. Note this, so that everything he might have supremacy. What is God doing in this world? Why did God create all things? Why is God doing this? What's happening in my life? Because God wants Jesus to supreme in all things. Well, what's making disciples? Making disciples, saying to people, come back to Jesus. Making disciples say, submit to Jesus. Making disciples honor Jesus. Making disciples follow Jesus. Making disciple is being in sync with the whole of what God is doing in the whole creation, which is to put Jesus supreme in all things. That's what's happening in the world. That's what God is doing in your life. That's why God put you where you are, so that in one way or another, Jesus will be supreme. Now, Paul emphasizes again in another passage, because he goes zip through, not only in this passage, but he zips through to creation. Go to Philippians chapter 2, verse 9 to 11. Let me read that to you. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven, on earth, and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. What does the future hold? And so the passage looks a bit small there. Didn't get to actually crease it. What is in the future? The future is the day when Jesus, when every knee in heaven and earth will actually bow before the name of Jesus and acknowledge that he is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Do you realize that? Everyone. Now, here's the thing. There's two ways you're going to acknowledge Jesus as God is Lord to the glory of God the Father. You will do it lovingly or you'll do it begrudgingly. You either do it lovingly or you'll do it begrudgingly. For those who do it lovingly, they are disciples because they know that Jesus is Lord. They love that Jesus is Lord. They adore him as Lord. They see Jesus truly and wonderfully as the glory of God. And they want to just bow down and worship him. And for them, what does Jesus say? Eternal kingdom. But for those who will begrudgingly submit to Jesus, Lord, that, yeah, you're Lord, I hate this. Yeah, you're the glory of God the Father, I hate this. And what does God say? Well, at least you acknowledge that, but you go to eternal condemnation. See, what's making disciples? Making disciples being in sync with where God is taking everything. You can see that making disciples, it's not a small thing. It's not just something we add on to our busy church program. It's not something you just add on to your busy life. It is something which is integral to who we are and what we do. Your life was being, your great command, the command is to make disciples. And so our whole life needs to be revolved around this work of being disciples and making disciples. And church, the problem with church is we're so busy and cluttered with doing so many things, we lose sight of this sort of thing. So one of the big things that we want to do is get back on mission and put making disciples at the very center of all that we do. And so that's why we want to do some major changes. Well, let me wrap it up then. And this is something where it's an opportunity for you to dive deeper into that discussion in your growth groups. But here's a question. And I said, what is your biggest hesitation in obeying Jesus' command to make disciples? What is your hesitation? I don't know about you, but my biggest hesitation is fear. my biggest hesitation is rejection. And my biggest, other biggest hesitation is just time. It means I have to give time to go out of my busy schedule, go and talk to someone about Jesus. And that's not only scary, but it's inconvenient. I'm already busy as is. I don't want to have to be busy now to ring up this guy and go and talk to him about Jesus. It's scary and it's inconvenient. And what we want to do here is both scary and, can I say, inconvenient. And so my question is, how does knowing Jesus' authority and God's plan from beginning to the very end to make disciples of all nations to submit to Jesus, how should that change who you are and what you do? Let me pray. Father in heaven, you created all things through your Son, and you created all things for your Son, that he might be supreme in all things. The whole of creation was created so that Jesus would be the supreme in all things. And on that last day, when he returns, your vision and your plan is to put Jesus above all authority in heaven and earth, and for everyone in heaven and on earth to acknowledge that Jesus is Lord to the glory of the Father. Father, will you please forgive us when we have not bothered to make Jesus, making disciples, core of what we do. Will you forgive us when we have not trusted you and allow our own fears to dictate us rather than your command to drive us? Father, put it back in our hearts. Give us a passionate drive to making disciples a core of what we do. Not a core, the core of what we do. Give us the courage to make decisions, tough decisions to change our life patterns so that making disciples for Jesus is what we are all on about. Whatever context we are, wherever we are, and whoever we're with. It's not easy, but you promise to give us your full backing every minute of the day to the very end. Amen.